Thank you so much, Rabbi Turetsky. Such a enormous kavod to be here with you this afternoon. Rabbi Turetsky, I so much appreciate your overly kind introduction. Rabbi Benovitz, everything that you've done in building this remarkable, remarkable program, just infused with Torah, and that has shaped not just these young men, but our entire community for years. So important, and it's such a bracha to be here with you, to be in the presence of our amazing Rosh Yeshiva, and just, I have to tell you, it just gives me great Simchas Achaim, speaking with them and being the presence of them, Arenu V'Rabenu, Rabbi Twersky, I have Rabbi Sabalovsky here, I just saw Rabbi Tani Cohn is here, sorry, Rabbi Yossi Kamenetsky was is here. I mean, just really, these are our my Rebbeim and Chaverim, and to have the schus, for you to have the schus of being in their presence and learning with them like this in the summer, it's just, it's amazing. And being that I see that they're like this in the summer, I think I could be like this also in the summer. Oh my gosh, it's so hot. So, and then I see that it's mutar. I follow Maisa of our Rebbeim, so follow suit. I am really excited to be able to speak to you as we kick off this Yom Iyun about Godless HaAdam. Such a great topic, so important that you chose that topic. And I want to share with you, I'll start with the story, but really share the Gemaras that relate to how do you build yourself, you know, your character, your values, into to be the person that you're always meant to be. You know, one of my my esteemed Rebbe Umori is Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And I would go to Rav Lichtenstein, someone who I miss deeply and dearly. There's two pictures I have on my desk that I see every day. I have a picture of my family, and I have a picture of Rav Lichtenstein. And I think about often when I'm in my office, what would Rav Lichtenstein want me to be doing? So I often would go to Rav Lichtenstein and ask him for hadracha. I'd often go to ask him for hadracha on all issues that have come up in my life. One of the things that I found is that, and this is just a good etza in terms of a godless adam, is to learn how to speak to your rebbeim. One of the things I found is when you ask hadracha from your rebbe, it's very clarifying. There were moments for me where it was so clarifying, I didn't even have to say anything, and I knew the answer. Like, I would come in with a question, okay, and I had all these cheshbonos in my head, all these things, well, what about this, what about this, what about that? I'd walk in to meet Rav Lichtenstein and stand in front of him and sit, and as I was about to utter the words, I realized how absolutely foolish they sounded. It was such sheker that standing in front of MS like this, I couldn't even utter the words. And at times I would come before him and I'd be like, okay, I got that answer ready. Let me go to the next question. You wouldn't have to say it. It was so clear. Okay, but there's one question that came up to me often that was not clear. And that was whether I should make Aliyah or not. So my personal story is I studied as MTA. I studied English for 2 years. I went back to Yeshiva University, got smicha. I was in Gruss for 2 years. And then I came back to YU to learn in the Kol Elyon. I was a Rebbe in the BMP program. And also I was the assistant rabbi and then the rabbi of the Jewish Center, which is a shul in Manhattan. And there's often I would come to Rav Lichtenstein and I'd say, you know, Baruch Hashem, things are going well in America, and you know, my family's rooted here, I'm married, kids, Baruch Hashem. But you know, I feel like I should be in Israel. I feel like I should make Aliyah. Israel is the great bracha that Hashem has given our generation after waiting for 2,000 years. And my kids, shouldn't they be raised in Israel? I should see what I could possibly do to contribute to the greatest Jewish project in 2,000 years. Like, shouldn't I be in Israel? And it was a question that I came back to Rav Lichtenstein, and we spoke about it a number of times. And I remember once very specifically when I was saying to him, you know, there's enormous risk of making Aliyah. You know, life is so comfortable, things are so good here, I'm set. You know, there's risk. So Rav Lichtenstein said to me that there are some people who live their lives risk adverse. That is not how I live mine. And that's not how I encourage my Talmidim to live theirs. I want to take that as a frame to understand the key stories that relate to the Churban as told us by the Gemara. One of the Gemaras we're allowed to read, are allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av, is the Gemara in Gittin and Vav Amud Aleph that tells the story of the Churban. And there are really two stories here that are separate, but I think very much related. The first story is the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. We know the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, and that the balabas of the Simcha tried to invite his friend Kamtza, and instead invited Bar Kamtza, his enemy. Bar Kamtza shows up to the wedding, and Bar Kamtza is the host says to him, "What are you doing at my wedding? You're my enemy." And he says, "Listen, it was a mistake, but I'm here already. Please let me stay. Don't embarrass me. Don't kick me out." And the host says, "No, you have to leave." He goes, "Listen, I'll pay for everything I eat." He goes, "No." He goes, "I'll pay for half the wedding. I'll pay for the suda." He says, "No, you have to leave." And he notices, this is key, that the rabbis were quiet. The rabbis were sitting there at the wedding. They're lo michaba. They didn't protest. They were quiet this whole time. And they let this happen. So they let this happen. He said, "You know what? So the rabbis must have been okay with this." So he was angry. He was angry at the rabbis. So he said, he went to the emperor and he said, "The Jews are rebelling." So how do I know the Jews are rebelling? He said, "Well, I'll show you. I'll prove to you. Send the carbon. Send the carbon. And bring the carbon. See if they'll bring your carbon to the Beit HaMikdash." So he brings the carbon and he pokes creates a mum, either in the eye or the lip. And immediately the Kohanim, Chazal, they see that you can't bring the carbon. There's a mum in the carbon. So they thought that even though it's possible to bring a carbon, there's a mum in the carbon, maybe it's better that we should bring it. For Shalom Malchus. Look, it'd be really bad for us if the emperor was against us. Maybe we should bring it. And then Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis, who we don't know anything about Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis. I don't know who Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis before or after, but in this story he plays a very prominent role. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis says, Yomru Baal Mumim, that maybe they'll say that Baal Mumim, you can bring a mum onto the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe they're going to say that if we go and do it. So then the rabbis say, "Okay, so let's kill Bar Kamtza. Because if we don't bring it, and he's going to run back to the emperor, they know what's going to happen. So let's go, let's kill him." And again, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis says, "No, no, we can't kill him. Maybe people will say, you're Chayav Misa if you bring a mum onto the Mizbeach." So because that, the rabbis didn't do anything. And the Gemara says, "Mishum ambitinuto shor bezchayer ben avkulis charve et beitenu sarfa et echalenu veglitanu meatzenu." Because of the anava of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis, the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the temple was burned, we were exiled from our land. Now what does this mean because of the anava of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis? What is the anava of Zechariah ben Avkulis and how did that cause this destruction? So the Maritz Chayis on the Gemara explains that what it means is that Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis wasn't willing to take a stand. Meaning, it was okay. It could have been mutter. Given the situation with Shalom Malchus and the danger, it could have been mutter that Eis Lassos to bring the carbon on. But he put up his hands. He says, "No, I'm not going to do it. because of the, not Anava's real humility, but because of the lack of perhaps even self-esteem. He was in a position of influence that he didn't step up at the moment. He allowed, and the rabbis were quiet, allowed this decision to take place. So think about it, it's a theme that runs throughout the story, the rabbis being quiet. I mean, the rabbis standing in the wedding didn't say anything. When Bar Kamtza was kicked out, the rabbis in face of Bishchayr ben Apkulis's, you know, don't do anything, maybe people will say, didn't say anything to counter. So because of that attitude, that lack, that led to the Beis Hamikdash being destroyed. You know, I saw that Rav Moshe, in one of his tshuvot, quoted the Maritz Chayis, when somebody asked him, how is it that you are able to give psak? In Chidushim, new situations come, you're saying things that nobody's ever said before. That you don't have from the Rishonim, you take from them, but they're new situations. How do you have... And he quoted this Maritz Chayis and this Gemara. He says, that's the job of the posek. What are we supposed to do? Throw up our hands and say, we can't, we don't know? We're not going to do anything because we don't know? You have to have the courage to stand up and do something. You have to make a decision. You have to make a decision in your life. You know, just mentioned that Rav Schechter's 80th year. Talk about a posek who's made decisions just all throughout his sack, but this year, who made decisions and nobody else made. You know, the stories of this past year are so unbelievable about the kind of decisions that had to be made. You know, somebody told me, I don't know if this is public. I never know what's public or not. But I think, let me try to couch it as much as I can, that there was a group of hospitals that were trying to find hadracha. Everyone needed hadracha this year. What are you supposed to do? Ventilators, what's medical ethics, what are you supposed to do? There's a group of hospitals. They went around to different opinions to get hadracha, and they turned to one of the people in the hospital administration was from, so he turned to Rav Schechter, and he told them afterwards that Rav Schechter's opinion was the one that the whole hospital systems adopted in the end. That he was mashpia, that was all the hospitals. And you know, and Shai said to me that he asked Rav Schechter, how is it that, how do you know how to answer these questions when people ask these questions? And Rav Schechter said, they had 80 years of Achana for this moment. There are 80 years of Achana for this moment. And these are the poskim who put in this situation. They didn't say, maybe, I don't know, I can't stand up for this moment. Right? They have to make decisions. They rose to the occasion. As a great example of Dugma, who's in your midst. Rabbi Chaya ben Apkulis and the rabbi's generation did not. And that's why the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, according to the Gemara. But let me tell you a parallel story, which happens at the end of the, right at the end of the daf. It's the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is sitting in Yerushalayim when it's under siege. Right? You know the history that the Bayonim, that the extremists took control of the city, burnt the food, created the situation where there didn't allow peace between them, or peace talks between the inside of the city and the Romans outside. And the city was dying under its own weight. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai turned to the head, who was his nephew, and said, what are you guys doing? When are you going to... How can we get out of this? And he said, I can't do anything. They're not going to let me do it. They'll kill me if I suggest it. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai pretended that he died. They shuttled his coffin outside, and there he was able to meet Vespasian. He meets Vespasian, who was at the time the general. He tells them he's going to become king. And they had a whole conversation. And Vespasian finds out in the middle that he became king, and he's so impressed with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And he says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, tell me, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks for three things. Everybody remember what the three things are? What does he ask for? He asks for three things. As the Vespasian, as the general, who just became the emperor, can ask for anything, he asks for three things. He says, Yavne and Chachamel. Okay, give me Yavne. What else? Say again. Doctors for Hafsado. Doctors for Hafsado. What's the third? Wow, spoke to your grandfather. You know, these nice people here. We see them. Yeah, who, what's the third? So he asked for Rabbi Gamliel's line to continue, right? The princely line, the Davidic line to continue. Now, immediately the Gemara says, and interesting is the Machlokas, who was, interestingly, that the possibility of Rabbi Akiva, that they were upset at Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Why were they upset at Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Say again? He could have asked for the Beis HaMikdash to be saved. He could have asked for the Beis HaMikdash to be standing in front of the general. Yerushalayim is under siege. The Beis HaMikdash is at risk. It's going to be destroyed. He could have asked for anything. He could have asked for the Beis HaMikdash to be saved. So the Gemara says, why didn't he ask the Beis HaMikdash? Because tefasta meruba lo tefasta. Right? If you ask for too much, you're not going to get anything. So he didn't ask for the Beis HaMikdash to be saved. The Gemara in Brachos says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was lying on his deathbed. He was crying. And he was nervous. And he was scared. And his Talmidim come around him and they say, Rabbi, the great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, what are you afraid of? Why are you scared? Why are you crying? And he says, Epshar, if I was about to stand in front of a Melech Basar V'dam, he's about to stand in front of a mortal king who's here today and gone tomorrow, who could be bought with words and treasure, whose din, whose psak, is limited in time and scope, wouldn't I be so afraid? Kavachomer, I'm about to stand in front of Melech Malchei Amachin. I'm about to stand in front of Hashem, who cannot be bought with words or treasure, whose din is not short, but everlasting. Should I not be afraid? And I see that there are two roads that are standing in front of me. One to Gan Eden, and the other to Gehenna. And I don't know which God is going to lead me to. Should I not be afraid? I heard once that the Rav said that this story is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai reflecting on his uncertainty about the decision that he made. Can you imagine being in that position? Can you imagine being Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Standing in front of Vespasian? Having to have to make this decision? Should I ask for the Beis HaMikdash? Do I ask for Yavna and the Chachamim? I don't know if you'd give me, if I asked for the Beis HaMikdash, he could give me nothing. This is a real person. This really happened. Can you imagine being in that position? And his whole life, he was racked by the uncertainty. Did he make the right choice or not? And at the end of his life, two roads are ahead. Did he make the right choice or not? And I'd like to humbly suggest, that the key to the story is not, was his decision right or not? That you can never know. Or what could have happened, you can never know. The key to the story is that he decided. where were the other rabbis? Who else was smuggled out of Jerusalem to stand in front of Vespasian? Who else came up with a way to actually do something? When he spoke to his nephew, the head of the Bar Yonim, who said he's powerless, he couldn't do anything. It was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai who put himself in the situation. He was in the situation to make the decision. That's all Hashem wants. The decision you make, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai versus Rabbi Akiva, you choose based on the values you choose. You do the best that you can. But the key is, in life, is to make a decision, which is going to put you in a position to take risks, and put you in a position to make choices. You know, and this is true on the national level, you know, and the personal level. On the broader level, and I'd say this to you, each of you, Torah Godless Adam, what you can do in your life, the effect that you can have on people, your community, your peers, our Jewish world and society is enormous. It's enormous. Okay, you live like a Ben Torah, you act like a Ben Torah, you live, you don't just study your values, but you live your values. The impact that you'll have on others is enormous. You know, I remember there's a guy, I love this guy, I meet some, in my role, I meet some very interesting people. So I walked into an office once, I was meeting this huge CEO of a company, and you know, speaking to him about becoming a partner with Yeshiva University. Anyway, I walk into his office, he has thousands of people working for him. Right in front of his office, there's a big Sefer Torah. It's a Sefer Torah standing in his office in a glass case. So I'm meeting with them, like, why do you have a Sefer Torah in the middle of your office? Everyone walks through your office, Jews, non-Jews, everyone walks around. Why do you have a Sefer Torah in the middle of your office? And he said, Rabbi, what are you talking about? This whole company is for the Torah. Everything we do is for the Torah. He said, I thought it was a real estate company. It's like, it's not a real estate company. It's all for the Torah. We give bonuses based on the chesed that people do. That's how we decide who's the employee of the month. He said, my accountants tell me that we're giving away so much money, we're putting the company at risk. I really like to hear that. That was like one of my favorite lines. Okay, but everything we're doing is for the Torah. And he lives it. He lives it. He's out in the world. He's putting a Sefer Torah, not just a mezuzah on the door. He's putting a Sefer Torah right in front and center. He lives it. I mean, he's mashmia on people by living it. Okay, you know, we just spoke before. Somebody mentioned about our graduation, which was the most amazing thing, because the Ruach HaTorah, the singing, the we had a whole simcha dancing at graduation. It was like unbelievable. That's why I mentioned to you time ago, it was unbelievable. And this year, I'm going to try. I want to see if we can do it again, do a siyum, maybe a siyum for the whole yeshiva, and do it at a stadium again, and like really, like, it was amazing. Okay, and the person we honor was Jason Greenblatt. Jason Greenblatt went to MTA, went to YU, total mensch, Ben Torah, Anav. He was one of the people who established the Abraham Accords. Him, David Friedman, Arya Lightstone, there's all people who could have been sitting in this Beit Midrash right now. All people sitting in this Beit Midrash. Okay, who went on to get into the White House, to go on international stage, and to create that, living their values, bringing it to the world. The effect that you can have, it's enormous. It's enormous, the effect that you can have. It's enormous. You know, I remember that I mentioned Rav Lichtenstein about taking risks. So Rav Lichtenstein himself took risks, right? He made Aliyah. Rav Lichtenstein, the son-in-law of Rav Salavitch, he could have stayed in America. He had a pretty good path in front of him as in Yeshiva University. Everyone knew who he was. He left to go up on a mountaintop with Rav Amital and little caravans. Okay, and start a little yeshiva there. after 1967, the new territories that were just conquered. Okay? People didn't know who he was. What's more, they didn't understand him at all. Because his language, who he was, and he never changed himself. He was true to who he was. So they didn't understand his politics. They didn't understand why he kept on quoting English literature. Right? They couldn't even read English. And they didn't understand, but they saw he was a gadol b'Torah. It was a gadol shank, like it was impossible to refute how great. Talking about godless Adam, it was impossible. And because he was who he was and he chose the path that he had, I remember when I came back after I made Aliyah, what I saw, what I recognized, even though originally he was like sort of on the outcast, certainly of the Dati Lumi community, when I came back, he was mukar, he was recognized as one of the Gedolei Yisrael. One of the Gedolei Yisrael. And he was sought after for his opinion, his advice, and his decisions on all matters. I remember after he won the Israel Prize, like the greatest prize in Israel is the Israel Prize, and he won the Israel Prize, and I was speaking to a university professor, a very well-known professor in philosophy universities, not in the yeshiva world. And I said to him, did you hear Rav Lichtenstein won the Israel Prize? And he said to me, it's a kabod for the prize. That's what Rav Lichtenstein, by making the his risk, by living his life, by living his values, where he the impression that he gave off. So why am I telling you this? Each of you here, maybe you won't be Rav Shechter, as the posek to stand at universities and thousands of people in hospitals will be asking you for your opinion. Maybe you won't be Rav Lichtenstein. And you won't win the Israel Prize. Maybe you will, by the way. Maybe there's somebody sitting here who will be Rav Shechter. And it will be Rav Lichtenstein. That's also possible. But maybe you will, maybe you won't. But the key is to be the best version of yourself. Because that is what Hashem wants. All of you sitting here, by virtue of the fact that you're sitting here, I know you're already risk takers. You're already people making decisions. How many people in our community have decided to sit in Kollel for the summer, this whole summer, and learn, and spend their summer learning, given the choices and the options that you have for the summer? How many people are doing that? All of you decided, you know, to push the boundaries a little bit, to go a little bit against the grain, and to sit in Kollel and spend your time learning. All of you, I know, are pushing yourselves here in the summer. And what I'm sharing with you is, it's not just about the summer, but it's really about your lives. Be the best versions of yourself. Find who you are. Make decisions about who you are. And the worst thing, the challenge, is like Rabbi Yitzchak ben Avkulis versus Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Not just on a national level, but on a personal level. If you're just going through the flow, going through the motions, and being afraid to make decisions and to live your life on the right choices. Okay, that's a travesty. And the story of the Beis Hamikdash is a travesty for the Jewish people, but for yourself would be a travesty for your life. The worst Baal Tashchis is your years. The worst thing you can waste, okay, is the years of your life. Right? What you're talking about by godless Adam is how do you build yourself. Even when it comes to taking some risks, making life decisions, taking chances, building the person who you are destined to become. We just spoke about leadership to the Madrichim. But if you want to be a leader without, you first need to be a leader within. Okay? And that's what you're here working on in the Kollel this summer. And that's what you should be working on in these formative years of your life. How do you build yourself? as B'nai Torah, the values of Torah, filled with the teachings of Torah. How do you build yourself? Okay, to become that person, to know who you are with your life choices, to rise to the occasion, to be the type of person who be in the position eventually, in whatever level, to make the decisions that will affect not just your life, but our community's life, and maybe perhaps even the lives of Klal Yisrael. I'll close with one final thought. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says through Moshe, Rei Anochi Nosei Lefneichem Hayom, Asachayim Vesatov, Vesamavis Vesorah. The end of Sefer Dvarim, Hashem tells Am Yisrael that I have put before you two choices. You have the Chayim and the Tov, you have the life and you have the good, and you have Mavis and the Ra, and you have death, and you have that. Two pathways in front of you. Ubecharta b'chayim, and you should choose life. It's a little strange. You know, why does Hashem, why does that Torah have to tell us to choose life? You have two paths in front of you. This isn't like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai not sure what to do. You have two paths in front of you. If you have the life and the good and the death and the bad, do you really need to tell somebody to choose life? Isn't it obvious that's what they should choose? But the key is the accent, the first word, not the second. It's ubacharta. You should choose. You should choose. Don't let life happen to you. Make life happen for you. Ubacharta, you should choose. Don't just go through the motions. Godless Adam, become the gadol, become the person that you are destined to become. It's a real bracha to be here with you. I wish you only mazal and you continue your learning as you develop yourself over the summer. I fully encourage you to please take advantage of the enormous zechus you have by being around the incredible Rosh Yeshiva that are here with you. Mechilas Kvodam, take up all of their time with your questions. Speak to them as much as you can, as much as you possibly can, about anything. I continue to learn from them, and I encourage you to be at their feet every moment. Okay, and this will help you develop to be the person that you will be. It's really bracha. Only a mazal. Should have a wonderful rest of the summer. And we should all be zocha as we sit in these 9 days. We should all be zocha, the schuss of your work in building on yourselves and choosing the lives that are meaningful for you, that be meaningful for Am Yisrael. Then we'll see the opposite of Ischari ben Avkulis in the building of our Beis HaMikdash in Erev Yameinu. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for sharing. Our Kula will be taking place right now.